And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, Oklahoma and Texas told the Big 12 that they're out. When will this move happen? When should it happen? What does it mean for everyone involved? The latest on potential SEC expansion as the world turns. Plus, what does it mean for Clemson? Also coming up, who's under the most pressure this year in the NFL? Aaron Rodgers is back with the Packers. Which teams in the NFL have the best outlook over the next 3 years? And speaking of quarterbacks, could Deshaun Watson actually be traded before the start of the season? Madden ratings are starting to come out this week. What it means about one particular position in football and what are the worst cities in each state? What's the worst town or city in South Carolina? We have the data. We'll get it to you later on this afternoon. Plus, it's Tuesday, so we'll get to a top 10 list later on as well. And you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can click on our show page and there leave a comment for the show. You can also find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? Staying dry and staying cool. How about you?
Yeah, trying to do the same. Man, let me tell you, this morning, what a storm. And at one point, it felt like the lightning was right outside my window. It was one of those where you saw the flash first. I thought I had lost power. I thought that's what the flash was, like everything going out. And then you even heard, when you hear that, like almost like a screeching noise or like a high-pitched noise before the actual sound of the lightning, when it's that close to you. It was like right outside my window. It was a huge blast. I had just woken up, fortunately. Otherwise, that would have woken me up. And I thought, what was that? Crazy, crazy storms. Thursday, you know, I went out of town this past weekend. Thursday, when trying to leave town, the highway was flooded. They had to shut down the highway. I was trying to get to the airport. It took forever. And then I got out of town Sunday, coming back to Charleston just in time. I was in Nashville, and they had to shut down the airport Sunday because of their crazy storms. Now we got another one today. I just read an article yesterday about how this is just the start of it because of global warming. We're going to continue to set records for record highs, and then when it's so hot and humid, it leads to these crazy storms. Right, my brothers still live in the Northeast. They were saying, oh, yeah, we've had some crazy thunderstorms, more so than usual this year. Crazy, crazy weather. So stay safe out there. If you're driving around, stay dry as well. Plenty to do over the next couple of hours. Let me start with this. Yesterday, it became official. Oklahoma and Texas announced and told the Big 12 that they will not renew the media rights with the conference when the current contract is up following the 2024 season. So they made it official. They put it out there. Hey, we're looking to leave the Big 12. Now they have to wait for the votes from the SEC. Otherwise, they may have to come back, you know, with their tail between their legs. But they have told the Big 12 now, we do not plan on being back. We're looking to move. They even specified we're looking to move to the SEC specifically. And for Oklahoma and Texas, as I've touched on, you could understand why they would want to make said move. Because they could do less work and get better results, at least in terms of the bottom line. How will they fare on the field? We'll find out. But they can do less. I mean, they've been carrying that conference. Now they go to the SEC, everything's already set up for you. You walk in, it's good. It's like if you used to have to do everything at work, you know, you just have to plan everything. Or say you're a party planner, or you just took on that role. You always had to plan the get-togethers. Or even at your own house, right? You have people over, the husband's no help, or, you know, the wife's no help, whatever it is, you're planning the parties. And then it's always very nice when you go to a party and you walk in and everything's already set up. And you're like, wow, this is great. It's beautiful. I didn't have to do any of the work. I can just enjoy it. That's Oklahoma and Texas. They have been setting up the parties for years for the Big 12. Now they're going to walk into the SEC. They're going to walk into that ceremony, and it's already going to be set up for them, and they're going to say, this is great. Right? Just like when you aren't working on the job, when you're not putting together some sort of banquet or ceremony, and instead just attending one, you could have a little more fun. You could have a few more drinks. Right? You could get a little loose. You're not on the job. You're not working. Oklahoma and Texas, they show up. It's already set up for them. They're going to make a little more money. Right? They're going to have a little more fun with all the money they're making. Are they going to win more games? We'll find out. Is that party going to be better without you planning it? We'll find out. We'll see. You know, you could have a fun time. Sometimes party's not very good. They hired a bad catering service. The DJ's no good. Whatever it is. Right? It's like a wedding planner. You're planning all the weddings. Then you finally go to a wedding. It could be a lot of fun. Sometimes their wedding planner did a poor job. It could be a disaster. We'll find out. Will Oklahoma and Texas go into the SEC and have more success, same success, less success? We'll see. But they'll show up. Everything's already set up for them. The SEC carries itself. They don't have the whole conference on their shoulders. They'll be making more money now. They'll have a better TV deal, everything. It's like in real estate. You'd rather have the worst house in a great neighborhood instead of the best house in a bad neighborhood. Oklahoma and Texas were that best house in a bad neighborhood. Now they're moving into the best neighborhood in town. Sure, maybe they have, you know, the worst house on the block, but they're still in that desirable neighborhood where just by being there, it jacks up the price of the house. It jacks up their worth just by being in the SEC. They're going to make more money. It'll even help with recruiting, as if they need any help. Right? It'll help even with their brand, getting in front of more TV sets and eyeballs. And you understand why they want to go to the SEC, because the SEC just signed a new deal that will give the conference $300 million per year just to have the games on TV. That's their TV contract. $300 million per year divided by, well, now 16 teams here moving forward. And that deal's only going to go up, I imagine. But divided eventually by 16 teams, and that's how much they're going to be getting each year. Meanwhile, for the Big 12, yeah, Fox and ESPN already told them, we're not negotiating with you. And this was before Oklahoma and Texas's move. Fox and ESPN said, yeah, we're not interested in talking about renewing the contract right now. Now you take away Oklahoma and Texas, that only makes matters worse. Of course, we still have four more years. That's why 2025 is always discussed. That's when the contract runs out. But come 2025, without Oklahoma and Texas, this is why many believe the Big 12 won't exist, because the networks already weren't interested in them. Now you're going to say, hey, how about this Big 12 over here without Oklahoma and Texas? You want to sign a big deal for that? Nah, no thanks. In fact, according to people that know this type of stuff, 50% of the current deal for the Big 12 is already for Texas and Oklahoma. So whatever they're getting paid now, half of that is just because they have Texas and Oklahoma. So without them in that conference anymore, the Big 12 is set to lose at least half of their money, half of the income. And by the way, 87% of Big 12 games that have been on ABC or Fox over the years have included Texas and or Oklahoma. 87%. They've been carrying the Big 12. 87% of the games that are put on the premier network include Oklahoma or Texas. And the last stat I'll give you, the average number of viewers for a Texas or Oklahoma game, 3.5 million people. That's the average for the two teams combined. They're both over 3 million per game. Sit down to watch either Oklahoma or Texas. The average viewers for the rest of the Big 12 teams, 886,000. Four times as many people watch Texas and Oklahoma than the rest of the Big 12 combined, on average. These two have been carrying that conference. And without them, that's why the Big 12 is in big trouble. Now, the reaction from the Big 12, you could understand, they obviously weren't very happy. Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner, took the high road. He put out in the statement yesterday, although our eight members are disappointed with the decisions of these two institutions, we recognize that intercollegiate athletics is experiencing rapid change and will most likely look much different in 2025 than it does currently. The Big 12 Conference will continue to support our member institutions' efforts to graduate student-athletes and compete for Big 12 and NCAA championships. So on and so forth. Took the high road. I was put out the typical press release, PC answer. He wasn't going to take a shot at anybody. Oh, we wish them well. We're going to continue to do our job. Meanwhile, Oklahoma State's president wasn't as polite when he said that the Big 12, these two teams losing, or I should say leaving, was the result of months of planning with the SEC and a clear breach of conference bylaws. He also said that Oklahoma's actions were strategic and deliberate, and it is difficult to understand how an Oklahoma institution of higher education would follow the University of Texas to the detriment of the state of Oklahoma, taking a shot at the school elsewhere in his state. He had some other harsh words as well for the two teams leaving. And I can understand why the rest of the Big 12 should or would be very upset. Not only were they seemingly blindsided, but also because of those numbers I just told you. Half of their TV contract is because of those two teams. The majority of their viewers is for those two teams. A lot of those teams in the Big 12 have kind of been living off of those two teams. Now they won't be able to. And we'll see what happens to the Big 12 moving forward. Also, Bob Bowlsby really comes off pretty poor in all this. It was just, what, last week at Media Days? This is a quote from the commissioner of the Big 12 when asked about conference realignment. He said it's really moot on that question. Conference alignment is always at the discretion of the conferences. But you have to remember, the last time around, the last round of conference realignments was all driven by cable households. And we find ourselves now in a rapidly shrinking cable environment. It is much less driven by capturing a particular cable market, because if it's an in-market fee, you get a lot more money for it than if it's an out-market fee. So the more you include those things, the more revenue you're going to derive from it. That motivation is essentially gone, is what Bob Bowlsby said. The cable universe has shrunk 20 million households already. It's going to continue to shrink. And so a lot of the motivation for realignment is no longer there. That was Bob Bowlsby a week ago. Maybe 2 weeks ago, maybe it was for Big 12 Media Days. Within the last couple of weeks, that's what he said. It's really moot on that question. And so a lot of the motivation for realignment is no longer there. Then days later, oh, look at this. Oklahoma and Texas are leaving the conference. And the Big 12 seemingly completely blindsided. While reports indicate that Oklahoma and Texas have been talking with the SEC for about a year, many believe that's why Steve Sarkisian took the job with Texas. Because he was in the SEC with Alabama and knew Texas plans on joining the SEC. So let me go there for a couple of years, or maybe just a year, and then I'll be back in the SEC. Coaching in the best conference. So sure, let me go to Texas. That would make sense. But Bob Bowlsby, who was initially hired in the Big 12 after the last realignment to try to help the conference move forward, now is in big trouble because of this current realignment and never saw it coming. But the question now becomes, why wait until 2025? Texas and Oklahoma, when they put out their joint statement yesterday saying, yeah, we told the Big 12 we are not going to renew in 2025 and we'll look to join the SEC. Why wait until 2025? The SEC will be meeting on Thursday to vote. Well, I shouldn't say. That's me assuming. They're meeting on Thursday. The SEC announced a meeting for Thursday. I imagine they will talk about, if not have the formal vote on Thursday, for Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. If you don't get the votes and you're Oklahoma and Texas, then things get a little awkward. But they're going to be very awkward regardless, especially if you find out before the start of the season that the SEC will allow you in. Why not just join? They'll have to pay $80 million each, but they'll make it up pretty quickly by being in the SEC. And at the end of the day, it'd just be a little bit awkward to say, hey, we're going to stay in this conference, but we're out of here after the 2024 season. Be like if you were in a marriage and, you know, we're going to stay together, but I'm going to divorce you in the next 3 years. It's like, well, maybe you should just rip the Band-Aid off. Or if your boss came to you, it's a little bit different because maybe you need the paycheck, but if your boss said, hey, we're going to keep you around, but you're not going to be here much longer. Right? You're not going to make it in this company beyond the next 2 years. At a certain point, we're going to get rid of you. It's like, okay, well, better start looking around. Or let me just get out of here now. Maybe you need the paycheck, so you stay. But in a perfect world, it's like, I'm getting out of here. My boss just told me he's going to fire me in the next 2 years? That there's no chance I'm staying beyond 2024? Yeah, okay, I'll go find something else. Or you at least start looking around. It gets very awkward. You go to work each day knowing you're on borrowed time. Why continue to have Texas and Oklahoma in the conference for the next, theoretically, 4 seasons if we already know what's going to happen? And all the while, over those next 4 years, you have the other teams of the Big 12 that are going to be scrambling. Like, okay, well, what does our future hold? What are we going to do? Where are we going to be in 2025? It's a very awkward situation. You should just rip the Band-Aid off. It's like when a married couple may separate, but they live in the same house together. Like, it's a little weird. Maybe you should go move into a motel or a hotel or something. You're bringing other people back to the house, right? And your spouse, who you're not officially divorced from, is like in the guest room. Split up and go do your own thing. And wait for the divorce filing, but at least in the meantime, you're going on your own. Similar here. But SEC teams maybe should want them to wait until 2025 to buy as much time as they can. Because for half of that SEC conference, you're only dropping further down on that totem pole of the conference. If you look at the 24/7 sports composite recruiting ranks, going back from 2014 to now, the average recruiting class ranking since 2014, Alabama is number 2, Georgia 4, LSU 5, Auburn 10, Texas A&M 10. Then you get to Texas at 11, Oklahoma at 12 on average, just ahead of Florida. So you're adding two more teams that are two of the top 12 recruiters over the past 8 years. The second half of the SEC conference, well, you have Ole Miss at 22nd, Mississippi State at 25th, South Carolina at 28th, Arkansas 28th, Kentucky 32nd, Missouri 38th, Vanderbilt 52nd. That gap is only widening. The gap in college football continues to widen between the SEC and everybody else, but it's also going to continue to widen between the top half of the SEC and the bottom half. It's going to be hard to compete in that conference for a lot of these teams. If you now will have 3, 6, 8 schools as top 12 recruiters in the country, and even if, say, South Carolina, to keep it local, even if on average you bring in a 28th top recruiting class, sounds pretty good. But then you have to compete with 8 schools in your own conference who are top 12. Only makes it harder. What about winning percentage since that same mark 2014? Last 8 years, Alabama has the best winning percentage in college football. Oklahoma has the 4th best. They would be joining the SEC. Texas only has the 59th best winning percentage since 2014. But the idea is that they can turn things around. Especially if maybe they join the SEC, they get more money. Steve Sarkisian's there. Yes, tougher schedule, but maybe they'll have the funds to try to help. They'll get the better coaching, turn things around. But you have Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, LSU are all top 11. Florida's in the top 20 for winning percentage since 2014. Texas is still, since 2014, ahead of Kentucky, Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, Vanderbilt. And South Carolina's 93rd in winning percentage. Texas is 59th, Oklahoma's 4th. So for a conference that, again, is already tough enough, it'll only get even tougher for the teams in the second half of that conference. As you order the teams in the SEC, this is only going to drop down a bunch of those teams by 2 spots. And you can understand why Greg Sankey was all for the college football playoff expansion. Greg Sankey turns out to be Kaiser Soze from Usual Suspects, right? Where at the end, Kevin Spacey is in the detective's office, Chaz Palminteri, and he's talking to him, and Chaz doesn't realize till he leaves, like, wait a minute, he was the guy I was looking for the whole time. Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlsby worked together on expansion for the college football playoff. And all the while, Sankey's going behind his back with conversations to 2 of his schools about coming to join his conference. To the point where Bob Bowlsby 2 weeks ago was saying, we don't have to worry about conference realignment. That's not going to happen. And then days later, oh, by the way, Texas and Oklahoma are joining the SEC. Now, Greg Sankey's doing what's best for his conference, maybe not what's best for college football because that's what he's paid for. Right? But a Machiavellian move right behind Bob Bowlsby's back while sitting there with him. It's like if, you were working with the mistress. Right? They're right there next to you the whole time. You have no idea what's going on. You feel like a sucker afterwards. And Greg Sankey, while working on Bob Bowlsby, saying, yes, let's expand the playoffs. It'd be good for all of us. And then, sure, we're going to expand to 12. And then what do you know, by the time we get to a 12-team playoff, there's not even going to be a Big 12, and the SEC will be filling up half the playoff. No wonder they want more playoff teams. Right, if there was ever a conference that shouldn't want an expanded playoff, it's the SEC. They don't need it. They win the national championship every year. They put half of the field already. What do they need to expand for? Well, now you kind of understand why. It's all part of the plan to get some sort of master conference here and get 6 teams in the playoffs out of the SEC and make even more money. Greg Sankey started negotiations reportedly about a year ago. I'm sure it's part of the reason why he also wanted playoff expansion to be covered this offseason as well. Oklahoma and Texas announcing yesterday they will not renew with the Big 12 come 2025. I don't think we even have to wait that long. And I don't think we should either. Coming up, what does all this mean for Clemson? They're in the ACC. Right? And the teams aren't coming into their conference. Their conference isn't about to go under like the Big 12. But what could this mean for Clemson? We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
What does SEC expansion mean for Clemson? We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Plus, we got some tickets to give away for the Charleston River Dogs, their game tomorrow night. We'll give away those tickets coming up later on. Give you enough time to come grab them here from the station for the game tomorrow night. Now, Joe, you were just telling me an interesting tidbit about this band, about how one of their musicians went and became a politician?
Yeah, he was elected to Congress, served, two or three terms, and he was eventually voted out. Now, his opponent got pretty creative. He called his supporters the voters for an Orleans reunion.
Huh.
Evidently, it worked.
Yeah, obviously it worked. I would think that would backfire. I'd be like, no, I don't want that band to get back together. I'd rather just have him be in politics. So I was thinking about this. I looked this up because I was curious. Other musicians that got into politics, I don't know any of these people, except Sonny Bono was part of U.S. Rep for California's 44th District.
And he was also mayor of Palm Springs prior to that.
Ooh. I'm sure, you know, he just run on the, I got you, babe. That could be his whole, that could be his political campaign right there. I got you, babe. That's right. Otherwise, let's see. I don't know any of these other. I don't recognize any of these other names, other than Martha Reeves was the Detroit City Council member for a few years, and I think that's all I got here.
And I think Peter Garrett of the band Midnight Oil served in Australia's national legislature.
He is on this list, but I had no idea who that was. So you are correct. All these other musicians. It's a list of 10 musicians that got into politics. I only know those 3 out of 10. All right, because if you're you know, you're Mick Jagger, you're not going to get into politics. Why would you give up that rock and roll lifestyle to become a politician? But I'll tell you what, Jimmy Buffett, that's who we should get. As I said, I was in Nashville. He took over Nashville, too. He took over Florida, everywhere. You go here in the South, Jimmy Buffett.
He even owns a retirement community down there.
Yes. That's who I would want. Talk about that laid-back lifestyle. Jimmy Buffett. If there's ever a musician, big Jimmy Buffett guy, throw Jimmy Buffett in office and kick your feet up and relax. So we know about Oklahoma and Texas making the move to the SEC. In fact, Oklahoma and Texas put out a joint statement within the past about hour saying, making official that they are going to apply for SEC membership. Now, again, it'll come down to the vote, but we know where this is going. They're trying to start their move over to the SEC. What does this mean for Clemson? You may not think about Clemson because they're not in the SEC. They're not in the Big 12, so who cares? But Paul Feinbaum was on the Dan Patrick Show which you can hear on her sister station. This was from yesterday. And Feinbaum was asked about this. What about Clemson? Here's what Mr. SEC had to say about the Clemson Tigers.
Wow, you're assured of your league, but your brand has gone down a little bit because the ACC has some real issues. I heard over the weekend the ACC was looking to expand, and one of the first schools they were talking about is West Virginia. Now, they turned their nose up at West Virginia 10 years ago, Dan, and West Virginia had to hightail it across the country. So, I mean, you'll add a few schools, but you can't compete. And I'm not saying, well, let me back up for a second. The biggest prize left out there is Notre Dame, and they're kind of half in the ACC. But, you know, if you're Notre Dame, why do you need the ACC right now? You already have the benefit of it in basketball. You collect the money there, and you play five games a year, and you have your own TV network. It doesn't make much – right now it doesn't make much sense.
Feinbaum yesterday talking about for Clemson, right, it takes a little hit to their brand. I don't know if that's the case. Now, for all the schools outside of this, what's becoming a super league here, the SEC, sure, you much prefer probably to be part of that conference. But until things really start to expand, Clemson is still going to compete for national titles. I mean, really, is much going to change in how we look at Clemson just by Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC? As Feinbaum says, the ACC has issues. They can't compete. These are all true things, but they've also been true for a while. Clemson has been propping that conference up. Clemson is the Oklahoma and Texas of the ACC, that if Clemson leaves, yeah, you still have Florida State and you have Miami, right? But Clemson's the only thing holding that thing up right now. The Big 12, they're scrambling now. Oh, no, we're losing Oklahoma and Texas. What else do we have? Right, the ACC would be the same way. Like, we're losing Clemson? What else do we have right now? Unless you could get Florida State back to where they were about a decade ago or Miami back to where they were 20 years ago. So, sure, the ACC does have issues. They've had issues for a couple of years. They don't have enough depth. The teams behind Clemson aren't good enough. Sure, they can't compete with what the SEC's building. They already couldn't compete. But that doesn't or hasn't affected Clemson's ability to perform. In terms of the brand, yeah, okay, right, because they're being, right now, they're on the outside looking in. Right? They're being left out. The SEC is going and getting Oklahoma and Texas. Here's Clemson still stuck over here, quote-unquote stuck in the ACC. But when push comes to shove, if we ever get one of these super leagues, super conferences, where it's just take the 16 biggest brands or the 20 best teams, whatever it may be, Clemson will be included. So you don't have to worry about being left behind or being forgotten about. Clemson and Ohio State, I think, are the only two schools outside of the SEC that you don't have to worry about right now, regardless of what happens. Oklahoma, I would have said, was another one, but now they're joining the SEC. You can maybe make a case for like a Notre Dame, maybe like a Michigan, because their brands are big enough even if they're not good enough on the field. But for a Clemson and Ohio State, they're sitting there. It's almost like, you know, they always say don't talk religion, so let me do it through a movie. It's like the movie Red State, Kevin Smith's film from about a decade ago, where it was about this this cult that believed the world was coming to an end and they were going to get ushered up to heaven, and they were waiting for that time to come. And they were causing all sorts of mayhem. They got into a shootout and everything, and they were waiting for the rapture. That was the moment they were waiting for. And so maybe not the best comparison, but if you're Clemson, you're sitting there watching all this mayhem going on and realizing, like, hey, when the time comes, right, they're going to call on us too. When they want to build that super conference, sure, maybe you could say our brand took a hit in the past couple of weeks here with Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC and us being stuck in the ACC. But when push comes to shove and they want to build some sort of super conference, or they're looking to expand further beyond those two schools, you know they're going to be interested in us. They're going to call us. They're going to call upon us. We're going to get called up to the big leagues, to the Super League. So I wouldn't be overly concerned if I was a Clemson. Even if the ACC falls apart, just hypothetically speaking, you want to tell me they have issues, they can't compete, no one's going to want to join their conference, they're moving in the wrong direction, whatever case you want to make. If the ACC goes the way of the Big 12 in the next couple of years, okay, everybody will love the opportunity to gobble up Clemson and say, come join our conference. The one concern I would say, as mentioned yesterday, would be the concern that Clemson, despite their recent success, I would not say is one of the biggest brands in college football. In fact, the revenue would also suggest that that's not the case. So if there ever becomes a time where they're not competing like they currently are, where they go back to the old Clemson from 12 years ago, well, you don't have the brand to fall back on like a Michigan or a Notre Dame, or even like a Nebraska or Wisconsin even a little bit, where they're not very good on the field, but they still are such a big program that you focus on them. They get paid so much attention. They still make a ton of money. That would be my one concern. But I don't think Clemson's slowing down anytime soon. So as long as they continue to play at this level, when the time comes for further expansion or some sort of super conference, you know they're going to be included. So I don't think Clemson takes much of a hit here. But there is concern for the ACC, and Jay Billis has a proposal. This was Jay on SportsCenter yesterday talking about if you're the ACC, there's one phone call you should make today.
If you're in this business now, you're going to have to start thinking bigger. Greg Sankey and the SEC are certainly doing that. If I were commissioner of the ACC, one thing I'd be thinking about is approaching the SEC and saying, look at all the natural rivalries we have interconference. Why don't we start thinking about a merger? And because that's what the SEC is going to become. It's going to become the NFL, a junior NFL and
that's
a junior NBA. And there's no reason why the ACC shouldn't jump in there and take advantage of those natural rivalries and markets. And if I were Jim Phillips, I'd be ringing Greg Sankey's phone saying, how about a merger?
Jay Billis on SportsCenter yesterday. It'd be like the old Southern Conference from 100 years ago. Go back 100 years, that's what we had with the Southern Conference. You had Alabama, and you had Auburn, and you had Clemson, and you had Duke, and you had Florida, and you had all of these teams.
And a lot of people don't realize the SEC and ACC were spinoffs of the SoCon.
Yes, that's right. Bow down to the Southern Conference, will you? I was watching the Southern Conference Media Days this morning, getting ready for the football season. The Gamecocks, of course, were part of it. Tennessee, everybody was. All of these schools. As Joe said, it was a spinoff. It was Joni Loves Chachi going off and doing their own thing. But there was the Southern Conference. It would be very interesting to get that back here about 100 years later. But while the ACC, that may be best for them. Again, if I'm Clemson, I'm sitting there like, oh, I feel bad for the rest of you guys. Right, but if anything ever happens, you know we'll be good. And what Jay said about becoming the NFL, it's true. It's kind of what Dabo was saying, and people were kind of ripping him for it. But, you know, players getting paid now, free agency essentially with the transfer portal, this expansion where we're trying to consolidate into smaller, more powerful conferences, almost like an AFL-NFL merger, and then setting up the different divisions and conferences in the NFL. Expanding playoffs, having more teams come into the playoffs, more games on the schedule, just like the NFL's doing. It's become the same thing. And just to circle back to what Feinbaum mentioned earlier, because I forgot to say it, about Notre Dame. Right? He said that's the one card the ACC could play, get Notre Dame to join. If there was ever a chance, it was last year, and we talked about it at the time. That was the moment in which Notre Dame finally needed the ACC. Otherwise, the ACC needs Notre Dame more than they need that conference. They're fine on their own. That's why they've always been on their own for football. But last year was the one chance, and they let them come in for 1 year, go to the conference championship, and then just bail. All right, go back to doing what you – thanks for the help. Go back to what you were doing. That was the one opportunity. And we'll see what happens moving forward with the ACC and Notre Dame. But John Calipari has been saying for years, let's do four super conferences of 16 teams and have the top 64 teams right involved, which is pretty much the Power Five. Jay Billis is saying, merge the ACC and the SEC. We may get to a point down the road. This may open that door. It may start the move towards smaller, more powerful conferences in college football. Smaller in the sense of number of conferences. Bigger in terms of number of teams. Right? We may only have, say, four conferences, but they each have 16 teams, something along those lines. We'll see what happens with the ACC moving forward, what this may mean for them. But if I'm Clemson, I'm not overly concerned because I know if we keep playing like this, there's always going to be an opportunity for us. Coming up, speaking of Clemson, could Deshaun Watson actually be on the move? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Maurer Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Maurer Midday Show.
Could Deshaun Watson actually be moved before the NFL season? It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Great song from Bob Seger. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but this was his best album, Stranger in Town. I think people would agree, right? Of course, you get Hollywood Nights, you get Old Time Rock and Roll, which that song's very annoying, but was a big hit. But you get this song, and you get Feel Like a Number, is my other favorite Bob Seger, and it's all on side. That's side one of the album. Fantastic. This is a great song, still the same, about a gambler who can't kick the addiction. And if you're an Ozark fan, that was the song that was used, one of the workers, when Jason Bateman's character invests in that bar or restaurant, kind of like a resort thing in the Ozarks. That's the song one of his workers keeps playing in the jukebox over and over again all day in the restaurant. That same song, still the same. And then it gets stuck in his head, and he goes home singing it, and his wife says, I thought you hated Bob Seger. Remember, the song's on all day. I'm still waiting for season 4 to come out of Ozark. It's not coming out in August. Netflix announced that. I have no idea when it's going to come out. Friend of the show, Kevin Johnson, who's an actor in that show, I asked him not too long, when's season 4 coming out? He said, you're just going to have to wait. So I can't. It's the final season. I can't wait for it. They take like 2 years to put that show out, unfortunately, which is like Curb Your Enthusiasm. Another one of my favorite shows. One of the best shows you can watch. Same thing. They put out a new season like every 2 to 3 years. You got to wait so long for it. I'm used to, and then the worst part is nowadays with this, with the ability to binge, is you go through it in a weekend. It's like, all right, now I got to wait 2 more years to the next episodes. And for Ozark, season 4 is going to be divided into 2 parts, so I'm sure they're not going to release it all at once. You know how some shows have done that over the years? They'll put out like the first 7 episodes, and then a few months later they'll put out their final 7 episodes. So it'll be a little bit of a slow bleed, but I can't wait. Looking forward to Ozark. Speaking of Netflix shows, Outer Banks, their second season comes out this weekend, which was filmed here in Charleston. And friend of the show, Charles Esten, is in town this week because he'll be at the River Dogs game tomorrow night. They're having an Outer Banks night at the River Dogs game tomorrow night. And Charles Esten, who is in The Office and Whose Line Is It, and he's the father in that show, Outer Banks, he was on with us about a month ago. He'll be out there for that tomorrow night. I know he got to town yesterday. He'll be out with the River Dogs tomorrow night. Then he'll be performing at the Windjammer on Thursday. And then the second season drops on Friday of Outer Banks. And I'm sure I'll be getting to a little bit of that this weekend, too. I got to admit, I'm a sucker for that show. I love that show. Filmed here in Charleston. During the pandemic, had nothing else to watch. I said, all right, I'll try it. It was filmed here. Let me see if I recognize the area. And it sucked me in with that season 1. Looking forward to season 2. Charles, he invited me to his concert on Thursday, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm up for that at the Windjammer. It could be fun. But, Thursday night, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if I make it out there. Tickets may still be available online. But that's what I'm looking forward to, entertainment-wise. Get the Outer Banks this weekend. We got Ozark at some point. Who knows? Hopefully by the end of 2021. And then, of course, football around the corner. Will Deshaun Watson actually be moved before the start of the season? We have people doing Deshaun's work for him here. With all these reports, the media members putting out there that, a trade could be imminent. The Texans are agreeing to finally move him. According to reports, the Texans are asking for 5 assets. So any sort of combination. 3 draft picks, 2 players. 4 draft picks, 1 player. Maybe 2 draft picks, 3 players. Whatever it is, give us 5 things. And when it comes to the draft picks, I'm sure they're going to want first-round picks. Give us 3 first-round picks, 2 players, would be a lot to give up for Deshaun Watson. Could the Texans theoretically actually move him right now? His own lawyer, Rusty Hardin, came out and said the Texans have to ask for less. So now not only are we getting, legal advice from Rusty Hardin, now he's giving football GM advice. Like, hey, Texans, ask for less to move him. And then there was Quincy Avery. Who is Deshaun's personal quarterback coach. Quincy's been on the show before. And he went on Adam Schefter's podcast. This was recorded last week, was released yesterday. And so when he talks about Sunday, he's talking about this past weekend. Here's what Quincy Avery had to say about Deshaun Watson and his trade market.
This is just me talking with Nolan. I anticipate that Deshaun gets traded before Sunday.
Before this Sunday?
That's what I think. You know his agent as well as anybody, right? I don't know how people would feel about him going, as I've never seen one of his clients not go to camp, not report. I don't think that would be what the organization would want. So my thought is that I just don't think it bodes well for their organization for when their quarterbacks report this Sunday for Deshaun to be there. And I'm not sure if he'll be there or if he won't. But I just think that the thought of that happening would really be like, all right, we got to make some moves now.
You just made my head spin. You think it's only a matter of time before he's traded?
I'm 100% sure he'll be traded at some point in the coming future. I think the Texans have made the decision to move on. So he didn't want to be there. They're ready to move on. All they want is fair market value for it, and they'll get a lot. This is the best I've ever seen Deshaun look in terms of throwing the football, in shape, like his preparation for his season. And I've been with Deshaun every offseason since his junior year in high school.
That was Quincy Avery, Deshaun's personal quarterback coach. As you heard him say there at the end, he's been with him since his junior year of high school. So he knows him well. He works with him every year. Says he's never looked better now. That all sounds good and well. He said 100% chance he gets traded. All sounds fine. Except for the fact that, are we forgetting the 22 cases against him? And then yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, 10 women furthering it with like another criminal complaint or going to the police? I don't see how you could ever make a move for Deshaun Watson until this gets settled. The problem is it's not going to get settled until the earliest February. That's the first time Deshaun is going to be in front of, you know, like lawyers and everything. That's going to be the first time when we have the deposition. It's not going to be, nothing's happening until February on the 22 pending sexual assault lawsuits and the investigation that the NFL apparently is still doing. Maybe it's just me. I felt a little off when Deshaun showed up to training camp the other day. And I'm all for innocent until proven guilty. But I think, much like Major League Baseball is doing with Trevor Bauer, and I think most companies would do this, while the investigation is ongoing, just kind of like, step aside, right? Stay away. I think if it seems a little odd. I don't think it's good optics for the NFL, for the Texans, to have Deshaun show up to training camp, be there working out with the team. And on top of it, to have it be reported and to have a lot of media members talk about a potential trade. Just doesn't feel right. Something feels off. And it feels like you're forgetting about the 22 lawsuits or ignoring or not caring about the women and their claims. Are they telling the truth? We'll find out. But until then, I feel like we have to kind of wait and see. Could you really have Deshaun Watson play this year when potentially come February or come this offseason, say he's found guilty of just one of the 22 cases? That's too many. But especially if he's found guilty in all 22 sexual assault, and then how does that look on the NFL? Again, you still let him play this past year after we knew about these accusations that were then proven. So if I'm another team, I can't make a move for him, because while I believe in innocent until proven guilty, the problem is he may be proven guilty this offseason. So how can you make a move and give up five assets and trade away three first-round picks for Deshaun Watson, who may have a great year for you this year, and then come, say, February? Right? Who knows? Is found innocent, or I should say guilty of something, never plays again. And how does that look on you as the GM? You sacrificed your future for 1 year of what turns out to be, in the end, you know, like a criminal as well? Doesn't look very good on you. So I don't know how any team could take that risk to make a trade for Deshaun Watson. I understand he wants out of Houston still. I understand the Texans at this point may want to get rid of him because they don't know what the future holds. But how could you give up all those assets to bring him in with what's still hanging over his head? And if and when he's found innocent, then back to normal. Does he lose a season of his career? Yeah. Does it suck when he was innocent? Yes. But I don't know if there's a better option, because the alternative is allowing him to play, and worst case scenario, he's found guilty. And it's like, oh, well, that wasn't great. Much like Major League Baseball with Trevor Bauer. I'm always tough on Rob Manfred, but I think Major League Baseball's handled this situation with Bauer much better. They didn't do it right away. That's the one thing I'll critique him for. They took a couple of days, and then, you know, there was a lot of mounting pressure, and people were writing stories about it, and it felt like a little bit of a given, but they still did it before Trevor Bauer got back on the mound, before he made another start, once that news broke about his sexual assault case. And before he got back on the mound, they put him on the commissioner's exempt list. And Bauer is going to remain there until they figure this thing out. And same idea, right? Maybe he'll be found to have done nothing wrong, and you'll say, well, I mean, you've just cost him half of his season. Well, if that's the worst thing to come of it, I feel pretty good about that if I'm Major League Baseball, as opposed to allowing him to continue to play and then finding out, oh, actually, he did do some terrible things, and we let him continue to pitch. Just like for Deshaun Watson, allowing him to play this year and then finding out, oh, actually, these things are true. He probably shouldn't have played in the league this past year. I'd rather be safe than sorry, especially when you talk about the NFL, how it looks. Right? He's one of your employees or, you know, part of your league, the bad optics. I would say just step aside until we figure this out. but they haven't put him on the commissioner's exempt list. I know some reports are you couldn't do it in the offseason, but at this point now, he's at training camp. He's with the Texans. It just feels, I don't know, a little like icky to me that we're talking about, hey, Deshaun could be traded. Here he is at training camp, and we still have 22 sexual assault lawsuits hanging over his head after the year. I feel like that's a little more important to figure out than where Deshaun may be, what football team he may be with come September. Here's Booger McFarland on ESPN, one of the ESPN shows, talking about a similar sense, about how Deshaun is such a distraction. How could you ever trade for him right now until we get these lawsuits figured out?
This is a classic distraction. It's a guy that's going to show up, and his attention or his presence is going to take someone's focus off of what they should or should not be doing. Either way, because Deshaun Watson, let's understand what it is. Regardless of how you think his situation has played out, he has asked the organization, hey, can you trade me? I do not want to be here. He's talked to David Culley. I do not want to play for you. Nothing against you, coach. I know you're a great man. Hopefully you're going to be a great coach. I don't want to play for you. Secondly, he has 22 lawsuits, civil lawsuits pending against him. So anywhere he walks, not only in the Houston Texans facility, anywhere he goes, he is going to garner eyeballs. He's going to garner attention. People are going to look at him. People are going to whisper. People are going to answer questions. Even if he doesn't show up on the practice field, the media is going to wonder where he's in the building. Where is he at? What's going on? The definition of a distraction is when I'm taking the attention or the focus off of what it should be on. Something is distracting you. Something has your attention. Deshaun Watson is going to do that whether we like it or not, guys.
I agree as well. That's another point. Even if he is found innocent, even if you believe he's innocent, it's still a distraction you're bringing into the locker room. I don't see how any team can make a move for him, let alone the fact that we're still waiting to see what happens. And then 10 different women made police complaints about sexual misconduct, and two of them are not part of the lawsuit. That happened yesterday as well. And the timing in all this has always been interesting. Deshaun demands a trade, then this story breaks. Then Deshaun shows up to training camp, and now we get these police complaints about the cases or what he's done in the past. Meanwhile, the lawyer from the other side, Tony Busby, who's representing these women, posted on Instagram from his vacation yesterday calling Deshaun Watson an entitled, horny teenage boy. So that's the latest from Tony Busby in all of this. I just don't see how you could ever trade for Deshaun Watson with this big cloud hanging over his head. If he ends up being innocent, nothing happens, he plays this year, he plays next year, you could look like a genius as a GM. You got Deshaun Watson for your team and nothing else to worry about. But if you bring him in, and the worst-case scenario is that he's found guilty of something, and he's either suspended or who knows, maybe never plays in the NFL again, and you just gave up 3 first-round picks and 5 assets to bring him in for one season's worth, if he even plays this year, I just don't know how you could take that chance. But we need some clarity from the NFL, because we know, legally, nothing's going to happen until February. So is he going to be able to play this year or not? Because I think it's a bad look for him to show up to training camp. Right, the NFL conduct policy may be dumb at times, but guys have been punished for a lot less. And if this doesn't require some sort of action from Roger Goodell, what does? 22 different women accusing him of sexual assault. Let's figure that out first. Hour 2 coming up. Aaron Rodgers back in Green Bay. Who's under the most pressure this year in the NFL season now? It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.